What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Mike Dolce Show, episode 44. Dr. David Hawks is in the house today. Very excited to have Dr. David Hawks coming in. He is from Australia. He has a PhD in virology. Dr. David Hawks he works at the Florey Institute of Neuroscience and Mental Health down in Australia. He is the man. You want to know about vaccines? We spoke about vaccines a little while ago. Some of you people wanted more information on vaccines. Our friend Randy Huey, listener of the show, friend on Twitter, he said, hey, Dolce, why don't you call up Dr. David Hawks? He's the man. Let's talk to him. Let's find out what he has to say. He's the expert. So what did we do? I reached out to Dr. Dave. He said, fuck you. Well, he didn't curse. He's actually very professional. He said, yes, I will come on the show. Now, he didn't quite say it like that, but he's a super cool guy. So we're going to be bringing him on here real soon. What else do we have going on? We are busting our asses here in Dolce Land. There's so much exciting things coming your way. I almost cursed. I held back. I'm sorry, Ted. Remember, Ted. Ted, you. I wonder if Ted's still Ted, if you're still a listener, can you please contact the Facebook page? Shoot me a message, private message. If you have the mobile app, just shoot me a message through the mobile app. Ted, let it be the real Ted. Talk to me. I want to hear. I want to get some feedback from you. Have I done better? Do we have an understanding? I'd love to hear feedback from anybody. And guys, if you're listening to this show right now and you don't have the Mike Dolce Show app, what the fuck is wrong with you? Sorry, Ted. What is wrong with you? We built an app and put it out for free for you, and this app is awesome. It's got all of our shows on there. It's so easy. It's on iTunes. It's on Android. It's on Windows. It's on every mobile device you can think of. And if it's not, let me know. We'll build it and put it out there for you for free. It's free, bitches. Come on, man. Free is free. So you can listen to me. That's why you don't have it. Because you're sick of listening to my voice. Get the Mike Dolce Show app, guys. Check it out. You can communicate directly with me. You can send us messages. Boom. Dolce, shut the up. Or tell me more about this. Boom. I want to gain 10 pounds on my squat. I need to put, 2 inches on my vertical jump. I need to, increase, take 0.3 seconds off my 40. I'm trying to lose 20 pounds. I'm trying to tighten up my belly. I got a date tonight, Dolce. I want to cook Little Miss Pris some sort of sexy meal to get me in there. You know what I'm saying? Ladies, I want to tighten that booty. I want to lift the booty, round it out. Boom, so I can fit into that next size down jeans, the jeans you wore in high school. Ask me those questions. That's what I'm here, and I do this stuff for free for you. I'm pumped up. I'm excited. You know why? Because I'm eating Earth Grow nutrients, people, fully fueled. Drinking some coconut water, watered down or diluted with purified water. I love that. I don't like the full-blown coconut water constantly, so I cut it in half. I cut that shit, yo. I cut it. It's like when I go to a bar. I'm like, yo, give me some coconut water, yo. Put some purified water in that. No ice. That's not true because most bars don't serve that, and I don't go to bars because most people smoke cigarettes in bars. Why the hell am I going to go to a bar? What am I going to do there? Honestly, what am I going to do in a bar? Have you ever seen me in a bar? It's because I'm there, as working security. I'm the designated driver. One of my athletes is at an after party, and I have to be there kind of watching his back or her back, making sure that, everything's being treated properly. They're not getting screwed around, that they're not getting pushed or pulled, or the manager, the owner of the place isn't trying to make them do more than they're contractually obligated to, making sure they're getting their rest and all those things, make sure they're getting home safely. That's what I do. If you ever see me at the bar the 4 times a year, it's because my athlete's at an after party. That's it. So, I don't know what happens in the bar anymore, but I know it's not Dolce approved. It's not Dolce. And hey, if that's what you guys do, that's cool. I'm not hating. I'm not judging, because I know you're not drinking alcohol, because alcohol is what? It's a poison. You're not drinking alcohol. You're there being a designated driver, too. Maybe you just like to hang out, like our friend John McGuire. John McGuire doesn't drink. He goes at the bars. He has fun. That's cool. Go out, dance, do your thing. Don't pollute your body. Watch out for that cigarette smoke. All right, guys, I'm just vamping right now, waiting to call Dr. David Hawks. You ready to speak to him? Let's bring him on. Hold on. All right, guys, we are back with Dr. David Hawks. I'm actually very excited to be speaking with Dr. David Hawks, PhD. And Dr. Hawks, you received your PhD in virology. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I did a PhD looking at the HIV virus and trying to find out a bit more information about it.
And what information were you looking for? Fill us in, sir, because we know nothing over here. You know everything.
Okay, so virologist is a very broad term, and I was a molecular virologist, which you can probably guess means that I was dealing with very little pieces of virus. So I wasn't looking at AIDS. I wasn't looking at people that were infected with the virus. What I was looking at was the virus itself. Now, the virus is really small. It's, you know, thousands of a millimeters wide. But the biggest single component of a particular viral particle, so one HIV virus, is cholesterol. And we knew that if you remove some of the cholesterol, if you've got to think of the virus as a balloon, the rubber of the balloon is like the membrane. It's the thing that holds all the good stuff in. Well, good stuff in terms of HIV. And that's made up of cholesterol. If you remove the cholesterol, the balloon pops and everything escapes. But we wanted to find out, if you remove a little bit of it, the virus is much less infectious. And we wanted to know what that was. And essentially, when you remove it, the casing of the balloon can't move around, so the virus can't actually tell cells, hey, I'm going to infect you, I want you to get ready for me, and I want you to start helping me make more virus. And so that's essentially what I spent about 5 years working on.
And what did you come up with at the end?
What we came up with was that essentially the virus signals, it tells the cells to prepare certain molecules within the cell for the HIV virus so that it gets moved to the right area of the cell. And yeah, I mean, it's a reasonably technical area, as you'd expect if you spent 5 years working on it.
Sure.
But essentially what the idea is that if we can find out what cell proteins are involved in HIV, then we can target them. Because if you try and target the HIV proteins, the way the virus is, it keeps changing. So it's like trying to catch a greased pig. So instead of trying to catch a greased pig, we're just trying to find the fence posts.
Understood. And what's interesting now, you don't hear about the HIV virus or AIDS very much anymore, and it doesn't mean it's gone away. What there seems to be now over here in the States, and you're down in Australia, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And so over here in the States, and I imagine globally, it seems that the HIV or the AIDS virus is being mediated or controlled through medical intervention, where, I mean, it's a terrible, it's a nasty disease and such, but it's not nearly as sexy to hear about it, to talk about it, because it's not out there in the public media as much. Is that because, as I'm assuming, that the doctors in the medical field, they have found a way to extend life? And Magic Johnson here is a great example of somebody who was living with the HIV illness. What has been the development? Are you involved and aware? I'm assuming that you are aware of those type of actions.
Yeah, I mean, I still work on viruses, but I've sort of moved out of the field of HIV. But certainly, when I was doing my PhD, there was all these different medications coming up, and it used to be that, you know, the most people back in the 80s, most people got infected, or the biggest group of people got infected with HIV was sort of 1980 to 1984. And then as a result, 10 years later, you had the highest amount of deaths. So in the early to sort of mid 90s. But then, you know, you had safe sex messages and all this going out. But now we have viruses, viral drugs that can target all these different parts of the virus. And it doesn't mean anyone's cured of it. The virus will inevitably shorten your life, but instead of being, you know, a death sentence within sort of 8 to 10 years, which it still is in Africa when they don't have medications, but, you know, in Western countries with access to these sort of medications, it does extend your lifespan, you know, 20, 30 years. And, I mean, I was listening to someone I used to work with, a woman named Professor Sharon Lewin, and she was sort of saying this has taken it from a deadly disease to a chronic disease. It's obviously something you'd really like to avoid, but that's why it's not that sexy anymore, because they've managed to control it. Obviously, if we get a way of being able to cure it, that's going to change the game again. But at the moment, it's something you can kind of control, but it still will have a major effect on your life.
Sure. Now, you speak about cures, and you are a PhD, you are a scientist, you are not a medical doctor. And I want to preface that as we move forward talking about cures, because
really here, it you know, somebody like me and a lot of people, I think, like myself, and I'm just an informed person. I try and live a healthy life as healthy as I can, and I try and pursue knowledge and ways to make myself, my family better. And as we look around, I don't see much in the way of curing going on. I don't see much in the way of preventing going on. All I really see is a lot of mediating of diseases and of afflictions and of illnesses. And that's not coming from the bright minds on your end. I mean, you guys are in the labs and you're trying to come up with the science to unlock these cures and unlock these mysteries. When it makes its way to the drug companies and to the medical offices and such, it does not appear to be purely cure motivated. It truly seems to be financially motivated through the extension of these diseases. Am I wrong to kind of assume this and think this and start leading, you know, my thought patterns that way?
I guess I might take this opportunity just because it's something I really get often. Is I'm a scientist, as you've said. I'm a researcher. I've never been paid or received any money from any pharmaceutical companies. The way I get my wage is that the government, we put in an application each year and the government looks at it and they go, I think that's really interesting. I think that will have benefits to human. And they give us a package of money. It's always a little bit too small. And that's how we get our projects. So just so that your listeners are very aware, I have no dog in the race when it comes to pharmaceuticals. In terms of treatment, I mean, things like, you know, cardiovascular, I will preface this by saying we're talking the general population, not with certain, you know, there's certainly some genetic components that do change the game. But in terms of cardiovascular, if you follow everything that most doctors have been saying for about 40 years, like most doctors say, don't smoke, reduce your alcohol, eat a fresh, healthy diet, and do some exercise, and, you know, try and find things that you enjoy, you know, get rid of your stress by, you know, and that can be through exercise. Those sorts of things don't change. And they're obviously the best prevention for a hell of a lot of chronic diseases. If you, with type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular, if you do all of those things for your whole life, you're obviously going to have much less, you know, chronic diseases. That being said, you talk about, you know, prevention and cures and things like that. A lot of this stuff is not, it's not easy. So in terms of pharmaceutical companies, they're designed to make money, and, you know, how they want to do that, they produce drugs. And obviously if the drugs work, they will make money. If they don't, they don't. I think one of the reasons we were talking, one of the reasons you wanted to speak to me was that I think vaccines, in fact, are one of the few really clear-cut cases that you can actually be proactive and preventative for. And strange enough, this is something that the pharmaceutical companies actually make relatively little money from, because you give a vaccine once, twice, three times versus something like a cardiovascular medication which someone has to take every day for the rest of their lives. But, yeah, in the lab we're trying to find out how things work, and then after that we kind of lose control over a lot of things.
And, you know, that's interesting that you said, because we did start this and we were introduced over Twitter by one of our listeners, Randy Huey, on Twitter, because my wife and I, we spoke about vaccines and such. And we really, you know, as we move forward to have kids and we're contemplating, are vaccines right for us? Which vaccines will be right for us? And there's a lot of information out there, and we always suggest information. So right now we are in the information gathering phase. We're trying to learn as much as possible. So as we move forward, we can hopefully make the right decisions based upon percentages for our family. And the vaccine conversation came up. And what you just said is interesting, and we'll kind of get on that a little bit. I want to jump back for a second. So the vaccines, the pharmaceutical companies, they don't make a lot of money off these vaccines, right? Because they get, you know, you get a couple when you're a kid, you get a couple maybe when you're older, maybe if you're traveling or something else, and that's pretty much it. So these, like, the swine flu and the H1N1 and the different, you know, the pandemics that are reported on the media sites. I'm speaking here for the United States. I mean, our media just goes crazy. The media goes crazy about it because there seems to be a few cases on another continent somewhere. And then all of a sudden it seems vaccines are getting forced down our throats here, that everybody has to get in line and has to get one of these vaccines. Now, would that be justified to do that? Or is that And I got to back away because I don't want to sound like I'm trying to force conspiracy here, but it almost sounds like I've never stepped up. I've never gotten one of those vaccines during any of those outbreaks, and I still maintain a very healthy life. And it's due to, you know, everybody else I know around me, we've never actually – I don't know anybody in my large circle that's ever been affected by, you know, any of those pandemics, I say. But you could see the lines and you know, the doom and gloom, and maybe that's just our media that talks about, and you know, there's a shortage, and you have to go, you have to get it now. The shortage, it's going to be running out. Is that, you know, I remember with, you know, when Bush was president over here, there was, you know, they were spending, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on these vaccines and such, and there was a lot of debate over that. Was this even worth it, spending that much money for something that might not really even be an issue? Any thoughts that way? Now, I'm looking for clarity here, man, because you're the pro. Now, I'm just sitting here. I look at the TV, and it's like, Jesus Christ, do I take the shot? And, you know, or, you know, is that a waste of time? Or am I going to risk my life by not taking the shot?
I guess the first thing is, as scientists, we are probably more angry with the media's representation of science than anyone else.
Sure.
I do keep up with the U.S. I mean, you guys have a massive population. It's a very well, you know, very financially able population. So, of course, we keep up with what's happening in the US. I guess a couple of things I will state. Flu each year, influenza across the world kills 200,000 people. So a lot of the time when they're talking about pandemic or swine flu, all it is a different strain of the flu because it changes each year, but it gets a sexy name. And they talk about pandemics. People might not know a pandemic is just when you have a virus that's in a certain amount of countries and, you know, infects a certain amount of people. So, you know, if you get a virus in, say, I can't remember the definition, it's about outside my area of knowledge, but it might be 30 countries and you infect 10,000 people. That's a pandemic. Obviously, HIV is a pandemic by any definition. A lot of the time, like swine flu, I was in the UK working there when the swine flu was out in, I think it was swine flu in 2009, and my flatmate was going to Mexico for a wedding, and they were just like, oh, no, don't go to there. It's going to kill you. It's like, well, no, it's the flu, and it's, you know, it's a slightly genetically different one than a lot of the flus, but it's still the flu. The flu does kill a lot of people each year. In terms of the vaccine, a lot of the political decisions are made by media and by public interest. I can't sort of obviously say what the American government was thinking because from what I've chatted to Americans, a lot of the time you guys don't know either.
We have no idea what they're thinking. No idea.
In terms of certain things, I mean, the flu vaccines are really complicated. It's certainly not a clear-cut issue. And that's why I won't say get it or don't get it because, number one, not a medical doctor. I'm certainly not the person who will tell you medical advice. The flu changes each year and we gamble on what vaccines they'll cover. And, you know, sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't. I guess the other thing I should be really upfront and honest here is that I'm a big supporter of vaccines and we were looking at having a better flu vaccine in Australia. I didn't develop it. I didn't contribute anything. But what I did was I volunteered as somebody to test the vaccine. So I got injected with it and I gave feedback and they checked whether I got a fever or whether I got flu. So I guess that sort of gives you an idea of I'm prepared to put my body on the line because I think that when you're talking about elderly people, you're talking about people with cancer, those people, it can often help. Or at least the people who are in touch with me, if they, you know, if I get the flu, I'm down in bed for about 4 or 5 days. If someone with cancer or someone who's elderly and, you know, not in the best of health gets it, it can kill them. So hopefully that roundabout answers your question.
No, that's a great insight. And so what you're saying is, you know, flu tends to target or severely, you know, hurt people, kill people that already have compromised immune systems. Those are the ones that are more susceptible. So, you know, right now a young, healthy, you know, buck like yourself, you can go in there and be exposed to something that might kind of bring you down a little bit, but your own immunity is still strong enough to kind of battle back and get you up and running again, where the older population or the sicker population, they might not be able to handle it so well.
And that's the general rule. The thing that scares a lot of people to do with viruses is that in 1918, we had a flu epidemic that killed millions of people at the end of World War One throughout Europe. And the thing was that actually attacked young, healthy people. And it was to do with the way it interacted with the immune response. And this is the thing that everyone's scared of because you can identify an elderly or an immune compromised population. You can kind of segregate them. Once you have, and they're always worried about this sort of epidemic flu coming back from the 1918 sort of style of flu, is that all the healthy people are the ones that actually get it worse. And that's something that does terrify them.
Yeah, then you scared the shit out of me right there. I'm doing everything. I think I'm doing everything correctly over here. I could be walking myself right into a disease or an illness.
I don't think that taking up smoking and excessive drinking will actually protect you. Oh. So don't take that as medical advice.
You just ruined my next coming weekend. God darn it. Now, we talked about vaccines. I do want to jump into that a little bit because that is a hotly contested topic over here in the United States. Many of our Hollywood celebrities who are certainly not medical doctors, but they have the bully pulpit. They have the ability to get in front of the media and get their stories out there, and they rally against vaccines for a slew of reasons that might just affect their own personal circumstance. Jenny McCarthy would be one of the more famous ones that really is a proponent of not using vaccines or certain types of vaccines or linking vaccines to her own children's illness, which I do believe is autism. So, and I know you are a proponent of vaccines, and as I sit here and as I understand it, vaccines will help people stay healthy. But there are side effects associated with vaccines, just like almost anything else. So there will be a small percentage of the population that really does anything that will have a negative effect. So possibly Ms. McCarthy's son and people like her, I'm just kind of, you know, extrapolating, had that type of reaction. Now, if we take away the vaccine, then what happens?
Then okay. I might just interrupt you there because the Jenny McCarthy case, it's a lot more complicated. There's people who are more aware of it than I, but they think that actually looking at it, it may or may not have been autism because she claims to have cured it. But I'm not going to get into that. I guess the thing I might point out is that you talk about the adverse reactions, and you know, I think we can all agree that if you get an injection with a vaccine, you'll often end up with a sore arm. You might feel a little bit hot and sweaty for a couple of days. You might have a bruise. You might have redness, and it might be sore.
Sure.
There is no doubt, no debate. This is an injection or a shot. I'm trying to speak American. It's a shot that's designed to stimulate your immune system. When you stimulate your immune system, it stimulates your immune system. So you often get red and you get those mild effects. A lot of the things that people report, and you've got a vaccine reporting system in the States, which is fantastic. It's really broad. Anyone can get on the internet and actually make a report. They don't need to be a medical professional. They don't need to be a scientist. They can just be someone who's seen something, they've observed something, and they want to get it out there. And I think it's fantastic. However, when you actually report something, it doesn't mean that it's actually a result of the vaccine. So there's if you have a vaccine and you give a vaccine to every baby that is born, the chances are some of those babies might be in car accidents within a month of the vaccine, which is a general rule. And according to the system that works with your vaccine reporting system, that may be considered a vaccine reportable adverse effect. So a side effect of the vaccine. I picked a really way out example there, but what happens is people make a report. I mean, I've published a paper on the HPV vaccine. I will talk about it a bit more depth, but people reported that it had killed. And this is really serious. The side effects. If you're giving someone a vaccine that could kill, that to me is a game changer. That's their alarm bells, there's all these sorts of things. So what someone did was they looked, there were 32 reports of death when they came across the data. And they went and they go, let's investigate these. If this is happening, this is going to change what we recommend and what we want to know about whether it's worth giving. And they found that of the 32, 12, they didn't have enough information to find out whether it was either person or there was a death. Now, it's really hard to sort of make any statement on that other than these guys are professional researchers and they couldn't find information. So we've got 12 cases where we don't know what happened. Of the other 20 cases, they looked through. And, I mean, there were some that you'd be hard-pressed to say were vaccine-related, like someone died of a prescription drug abuse. This is something that's quite complicated, but it's probably not going to be the vaccine itself. But they found that I think there were 6 people who had cardiovascular, so sort of heart-related problems, and there was 4 of one condition and 2 of another. So what they did was they looked at all these conditions and they compared them to the general population. And they found that there was no difference. So if you give a vaccine to 5 million people, things that happen one in a million will happen five times. And essentially this was happening. The other thing that was quite interesting, I'm trying to remember the numbers, I think there was the first showing of these conditions, I think, happened about 4 months after the vaccine. So if you get a vaccine in, you know, the 1st of January and you start feeling a little bit of heart palpitations in late April, to whether or not it's a result of the vaccine, I think is a bit grey. And this is why they looked and they checked of, you know, how often these things occur. And it's statistics is a really difficult thing. And I'm certainly not an expert at it, but you can kind of, you can understand that if you've given a vaccine or you're feeling a bit ill, you look at what's happened just prior to it. And it's correlation and causation is the, you know, the term often bandied around.
Absolutely. And you know, there's a saying, the easiest way to lie is use statistics, right?
You can absolutely.
Use a statistic. You can back in anything, point to the stat and say, see, there you go. But that's certainly not true. And that's why it's a debate over here, because we don't know. And I think it's very media propelled over here. There's a lot of misinformation. I think it's just, it's headlines. It's pushing headlines. It's getting people to tune in, to read, to watch, you know, get the view counts up or the clicks up or, you know, whatever the heck, you know, these things are being reported on. So again, it's that misinformation's out there. We're trying, by bringing you on the show, is to figure out really what is the right way to go. So let's say you have the traditional family, you have the man, you have the wife, and they have a little baby on the way.
Which is me.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. We're expecting our first on 13th of November. So, this is all stuff that's very relevant to me at the moment.
So this is actually perfect. Do you know if it's going to be a boy or a girl yet?
We don't know, and as far as I'm concerned, as long as it's healthy, I really couldn't care.
I'm with you, brother. That's very nice. Well, congratulations, man. That is so awesome. Now, using you as a great example, what will you do moving forward, and what did your wife or your partner, has she had any vaccinations pre-pregnancy? Has she had any vaccinations while she's pregnant? Because I know that is a consideration with the whooping cough, I think. Is that the TPAP that you know, a lady, an expecting mother should have, you know, as I understand, while she's pregnant, to make sure that the child does not, you know, get that disease, you know, moving forward. So I'll step back and just kind of let you fill us in a little bit, please.
In terms of the DPAP, or I think we call it DTAP here, it's essentially the same vaccine. We actually got it a couple of years ago because we've got some nephews and nieces, and there's a whooping cough epidemic that's happening in Australia. It's certainly happening in the US. I know that there were 10 deaths a couple of years ago in California due to whooping cough. There's no treatment for it, but the vaccine actually works reasonably well. So we got it a couple of years ago. We're up to date with that. So it was never a condition. When we found out my wife was pregnant, in that doctor's office, right then and there, we both got the flu vaccine because those sorts of things, you know, I might not get it in a normal year, but in terms of this, we got it then and there. So in the whooping cough, whether or not you can get it while pregnant, it's certainly something to just consult your GP in Australia. They don't recommend it while pregnant. They recommend before or immediately after birth. Babies, their immune system doesn't really kick in, and they don't get sort of full protection from the vaccines until they're about 6 months old. They're given a 2, 4, and 6, I think, from memory. So we're doing everything we can to protect our baby when it arrives. I think I'm up to date with pretty much every vaccine. I worked in an infectious diseases building, so they gave us free for hepatitis and everything. So I'm vaccinated to within an inch of my life. And when we have our baby, I guess the other thing you said is I'm a vaccine proponent, and you're true, but I actually view myself as an evidence-based proponent. The evidence currently supports vaccination. If the evidence changes, I'm very prepared to change my view. As I said, the flu vaccine is quite a complex one. In terms of whooping cough, the side effects of the vaccine are minimal, and the risk of a child under 6 months, if they catch whooping cough, not only is there quite a risk of death, there's actually a risk of brain damage and of lung damage, even if they do survive. So for me, that's a no-brainer.
So as an evidence-based proponent, I mean, you're in the labs, you're working in those circles, you have a very good insight into what is working and the reasons behind it. And that's why you are suggesting and recommending and living the life right now with your family that you guys are being vaccinated as a proactive way to avoid these diseases, which certainly can become deadly. I mean, that would be a terrible thing to, you know, intentionally not go and get the vaccine for the whooping cough, and then, you know, God forbid, a child would be able to manifest such a, you know, a disease, and it could have, you know, serious effects. So it is one of those, you know, confusing issues, but having you on to kind of, you know, bring some light to that and shed some light on that for us, which is awesome, man. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I guess the other thing that I'll do is people often view scientists as, oh, it's just one thing or two things. It's like, I think we take a really holistic approach to life. I don't think there's one golden bullet. So my wife is, we've got the vaccines, but also making sure she gets enough folate and all those other sort of nutritional things that you have to be aware of. We're making sure that we do enough exercise and, you know, getting outdoors, and that she's, you know, getting a good night's sleep and all of those sorts of things. It's, I guess vaccines are certainly the one most spoken about, but with a baby, it's you can't, you know, if you were a smoker, you quit smoking, you eat as fresh and healthy a diet as you can, you do exercise. We're doing pretty much everything we can, and vaccines is just obviously one part of that.
And you say if you were a smoker, you would stop. Going back a few weeks ago on one of my podcasts, I got on the microphone and I was pissed. I was driving. I pull up to a stoplight. This might have happened to you or anybody else listening. Some of you guys might remember. I look over to my right and I see a lady, overweight, obese lady. She just looked unhealthy with the window slightly cracked down, and she's smoking a cigarette. I was like, ugh, look at that poor. I felt bad for her for a second. And then, of course, she's got the big gulp next to her. I'm like, oh, God, all the worst decisions this person can make. And it's early in the morning, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning. And I kind of look again, and I see in the back seat, she has a child in the car seat. So she is smoking in her vehicle with the window barely cracked, with a little baby, who knows, 6 months to a year, sitting in the car seat in the back, and she's sitting there drinking a soda. This poor kid and the environment in which he is growing, where she is growing up, I just felt, I was enraged. I was enraged at her. And at the same time, I just felt so sad, so terrible for that poor child, that innocent child in the background, that's just being exposed to God knows how many awful contaminants in that very moment. And then I just flash forward to her pregnancy and pre-pregnancy, and then, you know, the household, the environment in which this child's going to grow up and live and probably be destined to repeat her lot in life, that state in life, which is just a terrible thing. I know I kind of go a little sideways here a little bit, but man, what can we do? And that's really kind of why I try and get out and, you know, and get this information out and just talk about this stuff, have this conversation with people, because we need to avoid things like that, situations like that. And again, we need to inform ourselves and just make better decisions. And we're not perfect. Like you say, you are an information-based or a proof-based advocate right now, because that's what's in front of you, evidence-based. So as the evidence is, and that's based on the information that you're able to gather, and you have a great ability to gather information, you know, considering your profession and your calling in life. So the rest of us out there, we need to continue to gather information and make those informed decisions. And God, not be lazy. Because, I mean, you know that lady sitting in her car driving. She knows that's disgusting. She knows that's unhealthy. Like, what do you think, Dave? You think she's sitting there driving and she thinks she's a good mother?
In terms of a good mother, I don't know. In terms of there's certain things, like, you know, I like coffee. That's really a weakness of mine. I really enjoy my coffee. And there are things that saying, oh, coffee, too much is too bad, too little is good. It gets confusing. I think that sort of stuff is...
Oh, not coffee. I'm sorry. It was soda. She was drinking a soda. It was a big gulp.
Oh, yeah. No. I get that. But okay, I was sort of going is, like, with coffee, you know, I don't have heaps of sugar in it. I sort of, you know, whether that's good or bad is really quite debatable. I know that, you know, I was at the football the other night and I drank a Coke and I kind of go, all right, well, I'll drink my one Coke one Coke a month, and, you know, that's it. That's my splurge, and that's fine. I know that if I drink a bottle of Coke each day, it's not good for me. I know that if I eat processed foods every day, it's not good for me. I try and do as much exercise as I can. I enjoy distance running, those sorts of things. I know that if, you know, I eat pizza every day for a week, I will feel absolutely awful. Most of these things, we don't actually, they're not grey areas. In terms of, you know, everyone, no one in the Western world who's, you know, I'm 37, nearly 37, no one who's my age doesn't know that smoking's bad for you. If you're a 90-year-old, you may have been, when you were addicted, you may not have known. We know these decisions. Why you don't make them, there's a whole variety of reasons, but you know that they're not good, healthy decisions.
No, and it's a lot of it is laziness, it's selfishness. And this is, you know, in my world, what I do, I deal with these people all the time. I deal with elite athletes, which is awesome. But a much larger part of my practice is dealing with regular people, trying to motivate and help regular people live a healthy life, start exercising, start eating properly, start goal setting and creating action steps and helping to motivate the masses to move forward and start to do the things that they truly want to do. Because we all want to look good. We want to feel good. We want to be filled with that vibrant energy. We want to go out and make enough money to live that happy life and go to the places that we want to go and see the things that we want to see and be surrounded by the people that we care about with the little toys and trinkets, you know, that you want to have available. But it all comes with that action, and it comes with the accountability, really. So people like that, they know better. You can't – and I like to say – and you know, so I'm in an elevator. This is going back to a few UFCs ago. I'm in an elevator with a very famous coach of very great athletes, and he's just not in great shape. And he looks at me, and he's a little tipsy, and it's late at night. It's after the event. And he's like, Dolce, he's like, I need to hire you to get me in shape. And I said, shut the fuck up. You don't need to hire me. You know exactly what you're doing wrong. You don't need me standing over your shoulder telling you you shouldn't be staying out till 3 o'clock in the morning drinking alcohol, eating pizza and cheese fries and all the other bad things, and not exercising when you're telling your athletes to exercise. And he just, like, his jaw dropped, and he dropped his head, and he looked back up and he goes, you know what, man, you're right. You're right. And the next time I saw him, he had lost 20 pounds, and I wasn't there with him. I didn't write him a diet plan, or I didn't go for a run with him or anything else like that. It was just that little kick in the ass, that little bit of tough love. Sometimes, and that's kind of what I try and do sometimes, share just a little, trying to find a way to have that emotional anchor to pull that out of people. And that's just, you know, kind of that ties in. And that was the soda lady rant that we had earlier. So I want to swing back because, you know, something that's really interesting as I was going through and I was learning more about you, and I did a lot of research on you. You're really interesting, really smart guy. You are, you kind of pride yourself on being, not so much on being a scientist, but on taking science and being able to share that with the masses, with the regular people, where you can actually sit down in a bar and have a beer and you can tell your buddies and explain the very intricate, you know, technical aspects of science in a more, you know, pleasant version that's not going to turn people off and turn people away. And you can kind of get out there and do that. And one of the things that, you know, I'm reading your bio, so you work at the Florey Institute of Neurosciences and Mental Health in Melbourne, which is one of the top 10 brain, I'm sorry here, one of the top, the world's top 10 brain research centers. Which,
yeah,
is,
that's right.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit about that, because that's going to tie into what we do here with mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I guess I've sort of worked on viruses, and then I went, I want to do something a bit more. The word we use in science is translational, things that take it from science in the lab to the world. I've just segue back to what you were saying about science for the people. I'm possibly one of the few people in the world who's both been, I can do brain surgery on animals. They don't let me on humans yet. But I've also been a roadie for ACDC. So I think that puts me in a bit of a different lead. So I'm a working class boy originally from the outer suburbs of Melbourne, and I've got my tattoos, and, you know, they're just something. You know, I got a tattoo for my PhD. But I think that science is fascinating and really interesting, and it rules our lives. You're talking about health and diet and fitness. That's all science. But, yeah, so at the Florey, what I do is we want to understand how the brain works, because we're living longer, but we're having all these other conditions. There's things like, you know, anxiety, depression, addiction. You sort of touched on that with smoking. Things like sleep disorders, stress, all those sorts of things affect nearly everybody at some point in their life, and we're trying to understand what happens. So about 10 years ago, the guy that I sit next to discovered a protein called relaxin 3, which is firstly one of the coolest named proteins I've come across. And what that does is that's expressed in only about 4,000 cells in the brain. This is a rat brain, but it's probably fairly similar in humans. We have 100 billion cells. That's a really tiny amount. But these 4,000 cells, if you alter them, they can change how much you sleep. They can change how much you want to eat. Like if you activate the cells that these cells interact with, you can drive people, you can drive animals to eat more and to put on weight. So obviously, if you can block it, then maybe this is something that will, for people who have and this is not the regular person. Like, I'm probably carrying a couple of extra pounds, and I'm aware of it. I'm still in a healthy weight range, but, you know, I could always do with a bit. But when you're looking about people who are chronic obese and do have some fairly severe problems, maybe, you know, actually looking at affecting, seeing what how their brain works, this might be a way to actually get them back onto track where they can use diet and exercise to achieve their goals. So I use viruses to look at what these 4,000 cells do. So I've got these little viruses. I can put them in and they get into the cells. We're actually doing a project making these viruses, and we're doing it as a crowdfunding project. So I'll give a little bit of plug to Name the Virus. We're on Twitter at Name the Virus 1 or on Facebook at Name the Virus. And we put these little special ops viruses into cells and they express some proteins, but nothing happens. Nothing happens. You just, well, the cells glow red, but that's kind of just kind of fun. You inject an animal with a needle in their belly with a small amount of a particular designer drug. It does nothing to a normal animal, but an animal that has these virus expressing in those little cells, it turns those cells on full ball, like they're really, really activated for about 8 hours, or they can go really silent for 8 hours. And by doing that, we can understand what these cells do and how that affects your behavior. So we look at how it affects their anxiety. We look at how it affects their concentration, memory, learning, eating, sleeping. And by understanding how the brain works, like we know more about the solar system than we do about our own brain. And by understanding this, hopefully we'll be able to make leaps of, you know, different ways to actually modulate the brain. I mean, my personal goal is if we can, you know, you can affect anxiety and depression with exercise, as I'm sure you're very well aware. But for more severe cases, if there could be something with diet or exercise, that would be a perfect thing. If not, as you said, it goes down the pharmaceutical pathway, which is at the moment for anxiety and depressive drugs. It's really, there's not great options. But yeah, so this is what I work on day in, day out. And I work as part of a fantastic lab called the Peptide Neurobiology Lab. And I'm just in awe of a lot of the people I get to work with every day.
That is fascinating. So the application of what you're working on right now, that could dramatically transform the human existence. You, that right there, this relaxin three, I mean, I'm going to go a little X-Men on you. We can create armies of perfect soldiers that are aroused when they need to be, then they rest completely and deeply when they need to be. Their mood, their memory. I mean, you can actually create almost the perfect athlete. You know, if they're going to compete in the UFC and kind of join my stable, that'd be awesome. I don't think that would be illegal on the PED list justly yet. I haven't seen Relaxin 3 on the WADA list. But also, you could actually help. And you know, and I am a first and foremost, I'm a holistic guy. I believe in proper sleep and proper diet and proper exercise and stress mediation and all those things first and foremost. And when if you have some sort of metabolic condition, some sort of disease, some sort of external circumstance that cannot be controlled with that, then we seek medical intervention to get back to being healthy. And there are some people that are getting chopped open and getting lap bands put on and taking all sorts of just nasty, terrible drugs, which yo-yo, they tend to, you know, they lose the weight, then they bounce back and they have terrible eating habits. And, you know, history is showing that they're getting less, you know, becoming less healthy as a result of doing things like that. Now, something like this, and you say you can actually introduce a virus that will trigger, and maybe you can explain this again to me just a little bit better, that can actually change these patterns. Well, they'll eat a little bit less. They'll have more energy. They'll start to maybe sleep better. They sleep better. Their hormones actually calm down. Now they're not storing as much body fat. They'll be more rested. They'll be more prone to be active and exercise.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're doing this in animals. I will stress this, but the technology, it's called viral vectors, and they're essentially, they're based on viruses, but they don't give you disease, which is really nice. And these things are actually being used when you hear someone talking about gene therapies. These are actually viral vectors most of the time. So this technology is actually out there and is being used in humans. Whether or not you'd use it for this particular system, possibly if you're looking at somebody with an extreme condition. But this chemical's found 10 years ago. You think about it, HIV was discovered 30 years ago and we've still not cracked it, whereas a lot of drugs, as you're saying, to make people sleep or not eat, they're really broad and they hit a lot of different pathways and as a result have heaps and heaps of side effects. Like, you know, antidepressants or anti-anxiety drugs are really notorious for these sort of side effects. So if we can actually identify and validate that these 4,000 cells in relaxin 3 actually modulates your sleep and your eating. I did another interview in Australia about this particular topic, and they said, oh, so can I dial up my sleep and dial down my eating? And we don't know. It would be fantastic if we could. Now, there's a related chemical to relaxin 3 called relaxin, which is actually now used, got approved by the FDA, and they now use it slightly different purpose within 4 hours of when someone's had a heart attack. And that can actually improve people's outcomes after having a heart attack. So it's certainly not a take every day thing, but it's certainly something that you can see a pathway. Like, I love the fact that my science, I'm a real nerd. I love, you know, cloning and making these little viruses and doing all these sorts of things. But I also look at it as like, what I'm going to do, is what I research, is what I spend my 60 hours a week doing, is this going to provide some benefit? Because that's really what I'm interested in. If I wanted to make money, I wouldn't be a scientist. I could be an accountant. I've got a good memory for numbers. But this is what I'm really passionate about. And that's why I sort of involved in this lab and this sort of work, because I can see that it's been 10 years and we look at how far we've come and we look at, well, imagine where we'll be in 10 years from here. Maybe there'll be something that, you know, someone maybe that will be the virus, maybe it'll be a tablet that someone takes to avoid sort of a really bad anxiety episode, or it's just they have something that just modulates things just a little bit for a couple of weeks. Because if you take away relaxin 3, it doesn't stop people sleeping, it doesn't stop them eating, but they're just really out of sync. So this is something that can kind of, if you imagine a bowling ball going down a bowling alley, it's not the bowling ball. What it is those little bumper arms on the side of a pinball machine. Imagine them just hitting the ball in line so that you can get a strike every time. That's the sort of thing we'd envisage and really hope that things like relaxin 3 and other neuropeptides will be able to do for us.
That is fascinating. I mean, what you guys are up to and what's happening in science right now that, of course, the average person like myself, we are unaware of. And I've heard stats that the average person living right now, if they keep themselves healthy until they get to the 60s, 70s or so, you know, so let's say, you know, somebody in my age bracket, I'm 37 years old, just like yourself. If I can keep myself healthy and disease free for the next 30 or 40 years or so, the advances in science, well, that should be able to extend and prolong my life to 120 years or plus. And that children being born right now quite possibly could live using these same, you know, medical interventions and, you know, God knows what you scientists are doing, past 200 years old. Now, are you familiar with any type of, I mean, this, you know, we're kind of, you know, we're a little long reaching, you know, longevity science here, but are you familiar with any of these applications or these principles, you know, these developments that are happening right now? Because that's what everybody's looking for, right? We're all looking to not just be alive, but we're still looking to be healthy. You know, you don't want to be grandma sitting in the rocking chair at 70 years old and have to spend another 130 years in that rocking chair just decaying away. So we all hope to be having a vibrant state of life as we go and extend. Do you see any sort of application as we move forward?
I guess in terms of the longevity, it's really outside my field, but you kind of hit on the thing that I think is most important. It's like living to 120 would be great. But I don't want to live in a wheelchair. Like, my wife's grandfather, he's 91, and he still drives the hour and a half to visit my wife's parents, and he still helps with, you know, they've got a little property, and he'll try and help with, you know, putting the fences up or doing all those sorts of things. And, you know, he was going to help, you know, his brother's son to move house. And it's like, if I'm 91 and I'm still got my own house, I still drive my own car, I still have a really active social life, I'm still physically able to contribute to all those things that, you know, I love. And he was a truck driver, so it's not a profession that's known for its healthy living. But you look at that and you kind of go, if I get to 90 and then get struck down by a heart attack and pass away instantly, I'm pretty happy with that. And to me, that's more important. It's like living to 120, you know, being able to run a marathon into your 90s would be fantastic. But realistically, if you can live to, you know, it's now into the 90s. I've three grandparents we've had that have made it into the 90s. The other ones were Scottish, where, you know, my family, Scots, are known for their smoking and alcohol and poor diet. So there was, you know, there probably wasn't a lot of hope when my grandfather died in 1960. But that sort of quality of life, and to me, you know, things like diet and exercise, that's where we've actually made massive progression in the last 20 years, because we had this period in the 50s where everybody worked with their hands. And then this, you know, by the 70s and 80s, people were sitting at desks. And now we're trying to make this move back to an active lifestyle and being able to have a great quality of life. And yeah, so I haven't really answered your question about the science of longevity because I don't know. And I guess that's one of the things about being.
Oh, Dick, are you still there? Getting a little bit of feedback right now.
I don't know everything, and I'm not going to try and bullshit you that I do.
That is much appreciated.
Still here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. Great.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't moved. But
yep, you said you don't know everything, and you're not going to bullshit us, and that's fine.
There's a bit of a delay.
Uh-huh. I can hear you well. We back on. I hear you breathing.
Can you hear me now?
I hear you perfect.
Excellent. I think we had a bit of a trans-Pacific delay, but I think we've seemed to have cleared it up.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I'll be flying, you know, up at 30,000 feet or so, and you're flying wherever the hell. And, you know, I'm so used to now to technology, I take it for granted already. I come from the era that the cell phones – there was no cell phones when I was in high school. Beepers were brand new when I was in high school. But now I'll be flying on an airplane at 30,000 feet, and I'll be on my iPad or whatnot. And if I can't stream a movie on Netflix or if my email doesn't go through immediately, I'll get pissed off. How dare I, right? Who the hell am I to, you know, get – I don't understand the concept. I don't understand how it's working or even how I'm in that tube, that metal tube at 30,000 feet, shuttling through the air at 400 miles an hour. But I'll get mad because my tweet doesn't go through.
Yeah, I'm the same. If I have to wait 30 seconds for something to download, I'm really annoyed.
I know. So yeah, we're the same age. So, I mean, you went through the dial-up era, right? I mean, you didn't have there was no computers when you were in high school. You had to get the encyclopedias and go to the library just like I did, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I've being a scientist, the amount of papers that I have to review, when I started sort of my post-grad work, I'd have to go down to the library to get papers. And now I can sit on my iPad in front of TV and do my reading and do my research. And, yeah, it's fantastic. It sort of makes life a lot simpler than to try and physically track down the 200 articles or something I need to read.
Oh, my God. Now, do you think that is that a plus or is that a benefit? You know, I look at the kids coming up now. That they don't even understand, you know, I don't want to say they don't understand what books are, but libraries, why would I go to a library? They don't get out. They don't do those things. They don't interact with the world or the environment like they used to. Now, you kind of – you're one of the last of the true scientists that will probably have to go to the library and dig through the files and the card catalogs and open up the journals, you know, and kind of go and put, you know, feet to the ground to get this stuff done. Is that changing the world, do you think?
I think it's changing the world, but I really think it's changing it fantastically. I mean, there's the phrase of, you know, I can see further because I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. And this is what I see. It's like I had to go and spend 3 hours to drive to the university to get the paper, to bring it home and read it. And now someone can do it instantaneously. You think of how many vistas that opens up and how far we can actually progress now that you're not spending 3 hours getting a single paper. And I mean, you've got to mediate. It's like if you're going to sit in an office chair for 8 hours without getting up, you've got to do something about it. But in terms of the information, I read something recently that there's more information has been put onto hard drives and has been stored in the last 2 days than there was in the entire history up until 2003. And that excites me, that I look at how fast science is steamrolling and how fast everything is steamrolling in knowledge. Since I've been a student, which is, you know, 20 years since I went to university, and I love the fact of where will I be in 20 years. Hopefully when I'm in my mid-50s, most of this stuff will be passing me by and I'll be there to, you know, just give advice on how to actually structure your science rather than, you know, the bits and bobs, because it's just so exciting and there's so much new information coming out, and I would love to do nothing more than to read about, I mean, Wi-Fi you're talking about, that's Australian. We're quite proud of that. We discovered and invented Wi-Fi, and you kind of go, well, yeah, Wi-Fi, it's been, you know, accepted for about 5, maybe 10 years. What's the next technology in 10 years? And I just can't wait to see it.
That's true, and not a lot of people know that, actually. I did know that. You Aussies, you're smart down there. God knows what. You guys are planning to take over the world down there.
No, we get too busy, and sport and beer are probably the things that will stop us being a superpower.
Sport and beer, where you guys know how to live also. And what do you do when you get outside of the lab? 60 hours a week you're in the lab, you have a beautiful wife at home, a baby on the way. What do you do for fun? How do you get out and break free?
I I have a really short attention span, so I do lots of things. We just had an election, so we had elected a new prime minister, our equivalent of president. So I have particular political views, which I think I support. So I went and handed out how to vote forms because we also have compulsory voting, so everyone has to vote. I did that a couple of hours on the weekend. I did a half marathon a couple of months ago. I've got another one coming up. I was going to do a marathon, but we bought a house and we're having a baby, so my time's a little bit limited. I love playing soccer. Love riding my bike. I just anything and everything. I love cooking. I love American cooking, strangely enough. So I love all the Southern food and cooking something for 6-8 hours so that it's melting your mouth. It's not everyday food, but yeah, there's so many things that excite me, and I just can't do them all, so I'm trying to do as many as I can.
So you are, and this is a lesson to everybody else out there. Most people, they go through their 40-hour week, they come home and they sit their ass on the couch and they don't move until they got to go back to work the next day. They'll tell their kid to, yo, go outside and play or go upstairs and play on your PlayStation, and that's about as active as they get. And that's here, and that's not just here in the state. There's 120 plus countries that actually listen to this show, and I interact with many, many of them through other outlets. And this not just being the only one. And that is the pandemic to me, is the laziness, the lack of accountability, lack of motivation, like you have. So you're spending 60 hours in the week working on relaxing three, trying to change the world, save the world. You're buying a house. You got a brand new family, your baby on the way. You're running half marathons, and you're still getting out there and finding new ways and objectives to keep yourself moving and engaged. I freaking love it. Where it's not about the time in the day. It's what you do with the time in the day, and that's how you get productive.
Yeah, and I all those things I list, and I still feel that I'm not doing enough. I feel that I could do something more of, I do like a bit of television. I do get addicted to the occasional show. How I Met Your Mother's final series, I think, is the one that I'm watching and I'll be looking forward to this year. But, yeah, I do watch TV. I like watching football or whatever sport on TV, but it's a part of my life. It's not, I'll probably watch maybe an hour of, maybe an hour and a half, if I'm really honest, of TV a day, and then everything else takes up my time. I just don't have, I've got this backlog of TV shows that I want to watch, and I'm sure that when I'm looking after a baby in the wee hours of the morning, that will be my chance to catch up. But up until then, I look at it and I just kind of going, I'm not doing enough. I'm not, doing as much as I can, because, there's so many things out there and there's so many things I'd love to get involved in, but there's still 168 hours in the week. And so, yeah, and I look at people I find my wife inspirational. She's an environmental engineer and she helps rehabilitate rivers so that we get enough water to actually water our crops, but we also keep our environment and people can enjoy the rivers by living by it or by participating in fishing or whatever water sports they want. And yeah, she inspires me. And I look at other people and I kind of go, yeah, this got to do something else.
Absolutely. Now, do you live by water where you are now? What part of the country do you live in?
I live in in Australia, I think it's 90% lives within 50 kilometers. So about 34 miles from the water, because the middle of Australia is really dry.
Sure.
So yeah, we've got a river and we've got a 10-month-old puppy. We take him down the beach and he frolics in the water. And, in summer we spend a lot of time by the water. We've got a river near us. And so it's downstream of the big boat dock where the ships come in to unload cars and things. So it's maybe not the best for swimming in, but I certainly run along it. And
sure.
Yeah, there's so many things that, I love that, and we love the bush. So we're going away for a week we went hiking when my wife was 4 months pregnant, but it's nearly 7 months. It's a bit beyond her, so we're just going to go and camp and just spend some time out in nature.
I'm an outdoorsman myself. So when you go camping, how do you like to camp? Do you get a cabin? Do you pitch a tent? Do you? You're not going to build something, a shelter for you. You're pregnant. Well, not on this trip, anyway.
No, I mean we. Occasionally we'll stay in a cabin, but normally we've got a tent. We hike. There's some great hikes. We've done some 6 and 7 day hikes through Tasmania, which is our absolute wilderness. There's no way you can get in there apart from walk in and walk out. This time we've got a tent and we've got our sleeping bags and we've got our little camp stoves, and that's what we'll do. And we often just chuck those in the car because it's a really cheap way to travel as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And what a great way. You want to talk about, stress mediation. And just relaxing and unplugging and getting away from the rest of the world? I mean, are you able to shut your cell phone off and all your gadgets and just kind of go out there and be with your family in nature?
Well, the great thing about Australia is that because our population is so centered, once you get out of, you know, the main areas, you don't have phone coverage, you don't have anything. And so whether you turn your phone on or off really doesn't matter because you're not going to get any signal. But yeah, I mean, we went up into the near, you probably heard of Ayers Rock. It's a big rock in the middle of Australia. And we sort of drove along a mountain range and camped and did some hiking. You know, it was 2 years ago. And yeah, there was no, I didn't have any phone coverage for, I think, 8 or 9 days. And it was brilliant because there's, if you can plan a holiday and you just say, I'm not available, I find that's really difficult for me. I'm constantly sort of on Twitter or, you know, because I try and make myself available for answering questions about, you know, particularly vaccines, but pretty much anything. A lot of the time my advice is just really you should see a doctor about that. But, yeah, it's great to be able to just unplug. And, you know, I read a study that if you spend a week in the outdoors, your sleep disorders and you know, not being able to sleep and getting up at the wrong time kind of disappears because we things like light and exercise are what they call Zeitgebers. They're time givers. They're things that tell us when to sleep and when to get up. And if you get up every day at 6 o'clock and go for a run, you'll wake up about 5:45. Even if you've never done it before, if you do it for like a week or two, get up at 6 o'clock, drag yourself out, go for a 20-minute run even, you'll start to naturally wake up. And that's what camping does when you don't have, oh, I'll be on the computer till it gets, until 11 o'clock because it's dark. There's not that much to do. So you go to sleep. Then you wake up when it's light. And these things are fantastic for also for mental health.
Absolutely. You and I, we get along really well because I do the same thing. We get outside a lot. I try to wake up really early. The earlier I wake up, the earlier I keep waking up. It's like I keep getting up earlier and earlier and earlier, and I love it. I my eyes open. I'm full of energy. I get out of bed. I get more stuff done before 9 a.m. than most people get for, you know, between 9 to 5. So between 5 a.m. and 9 a.m., I'm done. I've done 2 full work days, and I've gotten a full workout, and I've cooked meals for the family. I've done all sorts of things. So by the time 9 a.m. rolls around, I can go on break, you know, and then I can just wait for other people to wake up and start shooting the emails back or conference calls and, you know, appointments and scheduling all the other things throughout the day. So the rest of my day is just stress-free because I got all my responsibilities done in that early, you know, the wee hours of the morning when nobody's bothering you, nobody's in your way, there's no traffic, there's no, you know, no none of those external, you know, environmental hazards or stresses kind of, you know, bumping you around. That's awesome. Now, are you familiar with the UFC? Are you a fight fan at all? I know you're a sport fan.
I'm familiar with it. I've sort of watched a bit. We don't get great coverage here in Australia. It's on one of the pay channels. So I am familiar with it. I have watched a bit, and it seems to be yeah, it seems to be the combination. I find it quite interesting. Like I was brought up on Australian rules, which is essentially fighting but with a ball in the middle.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, like I look at the it seems to be it's like boxing used to be, like back in the 60s, where there is obviously intense physical training required, but it seems to display a lot more skill than and I've sort of in my little bit of boxing seems to have disappeared, but yeah, I've sort of watched a bit of it.
Yeah, it's a great sport. It's the fastest growing sport in the world, and there is a big push down there in Australia now, where you Aussies, you guys, you love to fight. Evidently, you love the fight sports. You love sports in general, and I know the UFC has a pretty strong presence and growing down there. That I know there's a card coming up December 6th in Brisbane, Queensland. Is that close, far to you? I'm geographically challenged when it comes to
That's relatively close to Australian standards. So that's about probably 1,500 miles away.
Oh, wow.
But I mean, we have an MMA shop in our main street of Melbourne. There's about 4 million people in Melbourne, just to give your listeners an idea if they're not familiar with the size of my town.
Yeah, that's massive.
Yeah, so we have about 5 cities in Australia, and they're all Melbourne's 4.5 million, Sydney's 5.5 million, Brisbane's about 4 million, and there's a couple of smaller cities, Adelaide and Perth. So we have these big cities, and they're quite a long way from each other. So, but if you're ever down here, I'd love to catch up with you.
Absolutely, I'm going to try and make it a point. I think I have I might be going down for this card. I think there's 2 dates, over the next, you know, half a year or so that I do have a plan on getting down there. I'll make sure I swing by. You and I, we're going to stay in touch here from now on. If you have any plans on coming out here to Las Vegas, I mean, here we go. You got a place to stay if you want it. There's a might not be as exciting as Australia, there, regardless of what everybody else says. My version of Las Vegas is very boring. We live tucked into a nice little mountain. We never go near the Strip unless it's for a nice dinner or to go see one of the fights or a show. You know, so all that, you know, all the craziness that you might hear about, that doesn't happen in the Dolce household. We're drinking chamomile tea by 10 p.m. and you know, I got to wake up at 5 a.m.
Yeah, well, I've been to Las Vegas before. I had an uncle in San Francisco and another one in Anaheim. So I think I've been to the States five or six times. And I was meant to go for a conference in San Diego this year, but it starts the day that our baby is due. So I think the baby got quite a bit of preference. But
yes.
Yeah, hopefully next year I'll be over there. There's a big meeting for the Society of Neuroscience. And yeah, I'll see which city it's in.
Yeah, well, if out here near Las Vegas, that's no problem. That's awesome. Well, Dr. David Hawks, I really appreciate it. Now, everybody, I want you to check out. It is at NameTheVirus1. That is the project that you're working on right now, which is, what do you call it? It's a work source, or is it crowdfunding?
Crowdfunding. So essentially, we're trying to raise 10,000 Australian dollars, which is probably about 9,000 US at the moment. And what we're going to do is we're going to use this to make these new innovative viruses to help us understand by the brain. And what you do is you donate money, and which is we're very thankful for. And if you donate, say, the upper end, if someone donates $2,500, we'll name the virus after you. Or we'll name it after something you want. So, you know, the Mike Dolce virus.
Yes, that'd be so cool.
But the other thing is there's all these little rewards you can get through it. And for everybody who donates, they can contribute a name, and we're going to have the People's Virus. So the most popular name, we're going to name one of these viruses after, whatever the most popular, even from $20. So it's something we're trying to do because, you know, you talk about, you know, people's work and where they're getting their money from. I figure if I can go directly to people to get my money, then I think that's the best way. And it also helps people engage with science. So people who donate, we'll be sending reports, we'll be sending photos, we'll give you ideas of what we're doing and what actually science involves. We're not boffins that live in a tower in the sky. We're just normal people doing a normal job, pretty much the same as you. The only difference is we have a bit of a longer apprenticeship. And, yeah, and so that's it. And the other thing is my personal Twitter is at Mr. M.R. Hawks, H-A-W-K-E-S, and I'm more than willing to try and help, you know, present information, connect you up some really good, reliable sources. If I can answer it, I will. If not, I'll try and suggest somebody who can.
That's awesome. And everybody, check out Dr. David Hawks at Mr. Hawks. Check him out. Ask him questions. Be polite and professional, which our audience is awesome. I think you'll find that as you move forward. We have such a great group that's just involved with us. And if they're not cool people, well, they don't fit in and they're not allowed here anyway. So you don't have to worry about that. And Dr. David, I really appreciate you coming on and just sharing your information, sharing your time with us. Best of luck to you and your new family. Give your wife our hello and congratulations and love as you guys move forward. And I'm going to be in touch with you soon. And, man, I really appreciate your time. It's good getting to know you.
No, thank you very much for this opportunity. It's been fantastic. Cheers.
Cheers, Doc. Bye. There you go, everybody. That was Dr. David Hawks. Super excited to have had him on. What a cool guy, right? Most people, we were talking offline, and, you know, most people, the misconception is that, you know, scientists, they're a bunch of, you know, nerds and, you know, they can't really interact very well in society. What a cool guy. He's a guy that I would hang out with constantly. He feels like a friend already, just in the hour and a half that I was able to get on there and talk to him. So moving forward in the future, we're going to put a little post up on the MikeDolceShow.com. We have a forum set up. On this forum, I want you to start asking questions. We're going to bring Dr. David Hawks back on here to answer your questions. Anything that we talked about, anything else that you might know, let you guys actually step in and help guide this conversation. And that's what we spoke about afterwards. You know, I want to hear from you. He wants to hear from you. He's here to help. He wants to share his information. This is his life's work, and he wants to talk to you guys. And, you know, we want to help make that happen. Really appreciate it. Guys, remember, check out BangMuayThai.com, DwayneBang.com. Be a Bang Muay Thai affiliate. All you gym owners out there. You want to be affiliated with the number one striking system in all of mixed martial arts? Well, you better check out DwayneBang.com and become a Bang Muay Thai affiliate. It is awesome. Dwayne actually sends you curriculum every single week that he videotapes. So he tells you, respectfully, what to do. Here's the curriculum. Here's how to run the class. And then, boom, number two, number three, all the way through. We're going to get Mr. Dwayne Bang.com. We're going to get Dwayne back on here soon. We're going to talk about that a little more. His business is blowing up. It is expanding. It's growing. The number one striking system in all of mixed martial arts. That's BangMuayThai.com. Check out Onnit.com, our great friends at Onnit, and use promo code Dolce. Check out those Dolce-approved products on there. The Onnit Earth Grow Nutrients. They're real food. Check out that stuff. And, guys, remember, the College Diet Guide. Boom! The pre-order is out right now. Save 30%. College kids, you want to get lean and sexy? You want to add notches to your belt, or you want to add notches to your bedpost? You got to get the collegediet.com. You want to look lean and sexy, ladies, or for the ladies? Either way, it's always about the ladies. collegediet.com. Check that out. Get that pre-order going because it's going to explode. It's already, the pre-order is exploding. We were giving away sport packs. I don't know if we even have any left. I'll extend it just a little bit longer, even if we have to go out and print out more for you guys. A free sport pack with every pre-order of the College Diet Guide, but that's going to shut off soon. So I don't even know how much longer that'll be left, but we're going to wipe that off the website. What else do we have? Everything else is good here in Dolce Land. We're busy. I got big stuff coming up. I'm meeting with an athlete here soon. I'll tell you guys in the future. It could be another big thing. Another. I can't talk about this stuff. It sucks. But that's okay. Big things coming up. Another food product. All these, you know, that's not what gets me. See, my problem is I talk too much and I got to shut up because I get too excited. So I'm going to have to pull myself back here a little bit and just simply say, don't count calories, make calories count. Boom!